You're listening to Building the Game with Rob and Jason.
It's Building the Game with Jason and Rob. For tabletop game design, you really can't go wrong. Building the game, yeah, building the game.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, November 14th. 2016, you're listening to episode 233. My name's Rob, there's Jason. That's how we start the show. How's it going?
It's going
good. We haven't talked much in the last couple of weeks.
No, because you've been moving and I've been
in and out a lot.
Yeah,
so yeah.
Good time.
We've had a busy couple of weeks here.
Yeah.
As you said, I've been moving. We bought a new house and have moved. And the old house is listed. And as of this recording, it's about 7:15. So hopefully the first showing of our old house is over by now.
Hey, that's good.
So there's a chance that my phone will buzz and I'll squeal like a little girl at some point while we're recording this because we got an offer on the house.
Right.
But I don't expect it to happen that fast.
Probably not. But here's the good news for you.
Yeah.
It is the best seller's market it has been in a long, long time.
Downside is it's a little late in the year.
It is, but as we know from our day jobs,
mm-hmm.
around here, that doesn't seem to be affecting us for some reason.
Hasn't slowed anything down. You're right.
So hopefully.
Yeah. And as our realtor said that, you know, this time of year, if somebody's shopping for a house, you know, they're motivated.
That's a good point.
Because they want to pick a place and they want to get it closed and get in there before Christmas, before the snow flies.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's an excellent point. This time of year, if somebody's looking at a house, they want to buy a house. They're not just humming and hawing. So, yeah, that's a good thought.
That is a good thought right there.
Yeah. Well, what's been going on with you?
Actually, my wife and I have been playing a lot of games lately.
Oh, good.
So, most recently, the newest game we played is Potion Explosion.
Oh, so you picked that up, huh?
I did, yeah.
Yeah.
I got a really good deal for that on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It was like $37. And that is a component-heavy game.
Yeah, it's got all the marbles and the crazy chipboard thing that you have to put together.
It took me an hour between putting that together and punching out all of the little slots that come out of the potions. But it's a really fun game.
Cool.
The only thing negative I'll say about it, and it's not even negative, it's just I've played it twice now.
Mm-hmm.
And both times, I've mostly got to watch the other people make a lot of explosions in the game, which is, think of like a Bejeweled-type game. I mean, really, you pull something and you're trying to make things collide together that are the same, and you get to take them and add them to your stash. And that didn't happen for me much, but my wife, so it was constantly like, she would clear the board of a bunch of good stuff, I would have zero explosions. And she just destroyed me at the game.
Mm-hmm.
When I played previously with Katarski and two others, well, was John Dubois, Katarski, I think his wife and myself, and we played in, we did, like, it was more balanced with four players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying the game isn't balanced. The game is crazy fun. I love it.
Okay.
It would just be more fun if I actually was, like, getting to do the heart of the game
playing
the game.
A few bummer times. Okay.
But I'm totally willing to play it again because it's been fun. And my wife and I have been playing a lot of Splendor as well.
Good, yeah.
And what else? Oh, Patchwork. Patchwork has been such a fun game to play.
Sure, good.
Love it.
Yeah, I need to get that. I need to get Splendor. Yeah, man, I still have all my games in boxes right now.
Right.
Yeah, so that's frustrating.
It sounds like you. Just games in boxes, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, really, though, that stinks, so.
Yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just ready to be done, you know?
Yeah.
Just ready to be done.
Yeah.
Buying furniture and, ugh.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's really been my entire world. I don't have a whole lot to talk about.
All right.
That's been my whole world. For the last month, basically, which I feel bad about, and I haven't really had any time at all to think about games, game design, anything like that, you know. And Josh and Matt were kind enough to step in the last 2 weeks and pick up my slack for a little while, and I appreciate that for you guys. Thank you again, Josh and
great.
Matt. I think those were both really excellent shows, two of our better ones.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah.
So.
I am excited. The that new miniature NES thing. is coming out. Is it out now or it's out soon, I think?
I think it comes out day after Thanksgiving, probably, or something like that.
I thought it was out early. Well, whatever. It's coming out sometime in November.
Yeah. Maybe it is sooner than that.
I think it might be sooner.
I want to pick it up ASAP.
I am not going to buy it.
How come?
Well, number one, I probably wouldn't play it a lot, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I want one. Don't get me wrong. I want one, but I don't think I can justify it. It's only like $60.
$59.99.
Yeah. But also, I think there's a good chance somebody might get it for me for Christmas.
That's true.
So I'm holding off on that.
No, that's fair. I mean, here's the deal. We're going to get it and then save it for Christmas for the kids.
Yeah.
Because like, they'll think it's awesome. Sure. So.
Like, I mainly just want it so I can play Final Fantasy again.
Ah, yeah, that's good.
You know,
yeah.
I've been craving a JRPG for, I feel like, a year now and haven't really found just the right thing. So maybe I just need to go back to the original.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I would probably play that again, too. I loved Final Fantasy.
I never actually played the original Final Fantasy, ever.
I think I did. Maybe I'm thinking of just Final Fantasy 2. Maybe that was the first one I played. I mean, Final Fantasy 2 is, like, the game, right?
Well, I always think of Final Fantasy as the game.
Yeah, but Final Fantasy 2 was the one with that everyone remembers, though, right?
I never played 2.
Wait. Okay, maybe then we're... With, like, Cecil and Ryda and Kane and... No?
I don't know.
What? Look, who is this person sitting across from me? How have you never played Final Fantasy II? It's like one of the definitive original RPGs of video games.
I just haven't.
Somebody else back me up on this. This Final Fantasy II, man. It's airships. It's
yeah.
Chocoboos.
Sorry.
I played
maybe 5 or 6 hours of the first one, and then I skipped the rest until 7. And I played 7, and I played 8, and I played a little bit of 10, and I played 12. I put about 20 hours into 12, and then I found out, well, at about the 20-hour mark, that's when you're just about to get out of the tutorial. And I was like, F you.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I am not...
I remember you talking about that.
Because I'm like, this game is not fun yet, and I don't... It was more like 10 hours, probably.
If you played 20 hours of a game that wasn't fun, shame on you.
I think that's what it was. I think I put about 10 hours into it, and then I read something that says, once you get to about hour 25, that's when you get out of the tutorial and you get into the real game. And I was like, no, that's not happening. I'm done.
Yeah, that's lame. What is it like? I mean, are you getting a degree by the time you're done with it?
I'm sorry, I said 12. I think I mean 13. It was 13 that I'm thinking about. But anyway, yeah I don't
still,
know, man.
Yeah.
I don't know. Final Fantasy...
To me, Final Fantasy II was like the pinnacle. After that, I like all the 3D ones and stuff. I think never really did it for me.
I think most people say that Final Fantasy IV was the pinnacle. I think that's what most people say.
Okay, that's cool.
I can say that.
I mean, they're wrong, but they can say that.
I don't know. Seven. I still think 7's great. I tried going back to 7 once, probably 4 or 5 years ago. I pulled my PS1 out and tried to play 7 again, and it just... Yeah, I mean, it's hard going back. It's one of those that was glorious at the time and just has not aged well at all.
That happens. But
yeah, so I don't know. We'll see. I'll try. If I get that for Christmas, I'll try that again.
Cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We could talk about a topic.
Well, sure. What topic are we going to talk about, Jason?
Tonight, I wanted to talk about upkeep in games.
Oh, okay.
Let's start by defining upkeep.
Define upkeep for
what, me. What we're talking about, I mean, upkeep may mean slightly different things to slightly different people, but I'm thinking of games where you have to pay per turn, right? You have to not necessarily, you have to do something, spend something per turn to keep up with the things you have in front of you, right? Easy example of that to me would be Stone Age. One of the first ones that I ever saw this mechanic with was Stone Age, where you have to feed your people every turn, right? Mm-hmm. And you lose points if you can't feed your people.
Sure.
Because other games are harsher sometimes. Lawless, another game I've liked for a long time. That game, if you can't keep your upkeep, you lose cows from your ranch because they've either broken out or died because you can't keep up with them, right? So I did a tweet to ask some people what they thought about upkeep in general, and I got a couple of responses back, but do you have any initial thoughts before we go into that?
Well, so I don't play a lot of games with upkeep. Generally, I don't care for it, because usually for me, it just feels like busy work. Mm-hmm. It feels like something that's kind of irritating and annoying that for me distracts me from the parts of the game that I really enjoy. And that's really the only part of Stone Age that I don't care for. You know, because it's
actually one of my favorite parts of Stone
it?
Age.
Yeah. See, it's my least favorite part of the game, and I'm not saying that it's bad, but it's just I see it as one of those things that I kind of have to do. You know, well, like, I can't lose anybody, or maybe it's a decision. It's a minor decision sometimes where I have to say, well, I can send somebody out to hunt and keep all these guys, or maybe I could just let it go this time and I'll lose a guy in the next round, but I got some good bonus without that. But I so rarely make that decision.
Right.
I think maybe I've only encountered that kind of situation a couple of times in all the many, many times I've played Stone Age.
Right.
That I just kind of feel like it's just busy work.
It forces you to play a certain way.
It does.
So, which reminds me of Richard Lanius one time was talking, and he said he was playing this game and he had said, like, you know, they say, do whatever you want in the game. You know, it's sandbox, just do whatever you want. He said, and at the end of the game, I didn't do certain things, so I got punished. Right.
Yeah.
And it's kind of along those lines, right? Of, hey, if you want to have all your guys and not lose points, you need to feed them. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to force you to think about the game this way.
Mm-hmm.
And really, in Stone Age, in my opinion, what that is, it's just a simple balancing mechanic of more guys let you do more things.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, more guys has to have a cost to it. It's like evolution. Remember evolution?
Sure.
The carnivores are the best, but you have to feed them every turn.
Yeah.
If you can't feed them somebody else's thing, you got to feed them your own thing.
And I don't mean to criticize. And I remember that very clearly in Evolution. And it was also irritating to me in that.
In Evolution, it was incredibly irritating.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that the mechanic is out of place and that it's inappropriate.
Right.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's not fun for me.
Right.
You know, I don't enjoy it.
Yeah. I was just doing a little justification as to why. So in general, and we'll get to the responses in just a second. I just, in general, the reason I like it is because what it lets you do is it's got a little bit of engine building to it, right? The idea that I can build this engine, but mm-hmm. I have to put gas in it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Every turn. And the bigger the engine, the more gas it takes. And there's a penalty if I run out of gas.
Yeah.
And so instead of just being a straight scale of better, 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 it's better, but you got to make choices, mm-hmm. right?
Better sacrifice.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And what are you willing to sacrifice to have better?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's back in, we used to play Magic, the Gathering. There was the Lord of the Pit card. Mm-hmm. And I want to say that ate a card every turn. And if you couldn't feed it a card, it would attack mm-hmm. you.
Sure.
I think that's how that worked. So, And everybody loved that card, and I hated it, because I was like, this is stupid. Like, why would, you know, mm-hmm. and when I say everybody, I mean my friends. I'm not saying it's, like, a good card. Tournament style, I have no idea.
Sure.
I just know that my friends were super gaga about it, but, mm-hmm. like, I hated it, because you were constantly trying to pay it or getting attacked.
Yeah. When I was in high school, my friends played the Star Wars CCG, the original Star Wars CCG,
uh-huh.
and with the first one that came out, this would have been, what, 96, I think? 96,
right.
Yeah, probably 96, maybe 95, but anyway, and they tried to get me into it, and I was never a CCG guy, never played Magic. I tried Star Wars CCG, and the first few times that we played it, I thought, oh, this is neat, and they said, okay, well, now we're going to play it the right way, we're going to play with attrition. I was like, what is attrition? And they said, well, it's this thing where sometimes you have to discard cards. I'm like, what? And I think I played two games with attrition and...
Never again.
And never again. I was like, this is not fun. That I have to just... You're making me discard cards
right.
for no reason that makes sense to me. I just hated it.
Right.
And so I just sold all my cards to one of my friends and got never played the game again. I just don't care.
Right.
So I just... Yeah. By its nature, I find it frustrating.
Right.
So but right. let's see what,
let's
what
see
other
what
people...
Let's see what the internet thought of it.
Yeah.
So
Twitter... The Twitters, what do you say about upkeep in games? Do you agree with me that it's garbage? Do you agree with Jason that it's okay sometimes? Or do you think we're both full of crap? That's what I want to know.
Might be that. It usually is.
Yeah, very often. We are often full of crap, honestly.
Yeah, okay. So actually, I was wrong. We got one reply. we had two other replies, and they were about something else for the podcast.
Oh, okay.
So, hey, We got a reply from TC Petty, though. So, I mean, TC Petty's reply is worth 10 replies.
He's,
right?
He's one of the smartest guys we know in game design. So, I don't know what he's going to say here. I haven't read it yet. So, I'm excited. I bet it's going to be something brilliant.
It kind of shoots the middle from what we both feel like.
Oh, okay.
He said, I like actual tracks to track things on. I hate putting counters on things and having to keep mental track of bonuses and minuses. So, I think that kind of sums up how I feel about it as well, right?
Uh-huh.
Cause that was one of the things about Magic that I hated so much was the idea of having to put, I remember Thrall counters. There was like, you could, these little counters, you had to put them down like on the thing. And it just felt out of place because it was a card game. It was a pure card game.
Mm-hmm.
You got to die to track your hit points, but it's a card game.
But all of a sudden, I have to have tokens and penny gems.
Right,
and
I think that's dumb.
Yeah, I agree.
So so I'm with TC on that if you're going to track something like that, it needs to have an elegant way to track it.
It always bothered me that you had to buy a separate D20 to track your health and magic anyway.
Like, we played so much D&D that I had like 40 to choose from.
Well, yeah, I mean, so do I, still to this day. But I think that interrupts the purity of it a little bit. Yeah,
I can see that. I mean, now being a designer, that I think would bother me more.
Yeah.
Back then it was just kind of like, oh, you have to have a D20 with it. But now it's kind of like, as a designer, I'm always thinking about that. You know, like one of the first iteration of Unreal Estate didn't have a scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay with that, but I was always, you know, secretly like, you know, it took me a while to get around to that, right? Because I like the game does everything. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now it has a scoreboard, so that's super exciting. But yeah. Thinking back at it now, when you realize that you have to track that, it does feel like somewhat poor design in Magic. I mean, so I just said it's poor design and Magic, one of the most successful CCGs. Well, probably the most successful CCG.
Oh, I would
ever
say hands
made,
down, yeah.
Because it's been out for so long and still is continuing.
I think it'll survive our criticism.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Our insightful and realistic criticism.
Right now, us just talking about it, Matt Loomis is like, you guys are right, and he's emailing everyone he's ever met. Whoever played Magic with him and telling him, guys, stop. BTG says this sucks. You best back off.
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Because we know better.
So, okay. So here, let's take a different, approach to this then.
Okay.
What would make you be okay with upkeep?
What would make me be okay with upkeep? That is a challenging question.
I know. That's why I asked it.
Yeah. What would make me be okay with upkeep? Maybe if in some way it was fun. If upkeep was fun and it was the most fun part of the game, how would that work? I mean, because it's it's always one of those things that's interrupted the fun for me, right?
So to be clear, what Rob just said was upkeep is the worst part of a game that has upkeep.
Well, because
how do we make it the best part of the game?
Yeah, that's exactly what I just said, right?
Because, I know. Repeating how ridiculous that sounds.
It sounds ridiculous, but if it's a just every time I've played a game with upkeep, the fun part is other stuff I'm doing, and upkeep is something that gets in the way of me having fun. So if something about the upkeep becomes the most fun part of the game, then I'd be totally on board.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think with what TC said, he's right. It has to not be a pain.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it has to be so easy.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what I've got. So the game, it's upkeep. The game, right? You're building a keep.
Oh gosh.
Okay. You're building a keep. You're stacking blocks.
This is gonna go great.
Okay. And you have workers that are gonna stack the blocks. And every round, every active worker, every worker that's in an active status that has basically eaten the last turn is going to automatically build something for you. Okay. And so the rest of the game is about gathering food to feed these people, and that's the upkeep. So that's the point. That's how you score points. Upkeep drives points straight up.
So, but really now what you just said was feeding your dudes is upkeep, and then they're going to do something for you. But honestly, with the way you flipped it, you just made it so the game is about gathering resources and the upkeep is having to build stuff.
Upkeep sucks, Jason.
I mean, that's really what just happened here.
Upkeep. I don't like upkeep.
I'm starting to realize that.
I don't enjoy it.
That's so for me, somebody who's a little more rational than you,
okay,
clearly, for me, what upkeep needs to have is it needs to be simple to track, right? But it needs to be meaningful. It can't just be like, it can't feel like you're just doing it because it's counterbalancing the game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like it didn't even occur to me that was actually the point in Stone Age until we were just talking and I said it out loud, like, oh gosh, well, yeah, because it's balancing, right?
Mm-hmm.
It did occur to me when I was a kid and we were playing Magic and the Lord of the Pit. He's like an 8-8 with trample or something like that. He just demolishes things. So you got to pay to keep him alive, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or to pay to keep him from not killing you. So because of that, like, I got that back then. I got the idea that upkeep is being used to basically make something cost effective, mm-hmm. right?
Sidebar real quick. I just want you to know that I don't know what 8-8 means.
Did you never play Magic at
I've
all?
I never played Magic.
8 health, 8 attack.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, so 8/8, got I think. It. I could be wrong about that, but I'm actually pretty sure he's an 8-8.
Okay.
I think he has trample. Yeah.
Sidebar over.
So, yeah. Most of the listeners understood what that was.
I'm sure they did. I know
more than the football references we made, for sure.
What football? What?
Yeah.
go sports. Football. Go yeah. Chicago sports ball team.
Yeah, I mean the Cubs, man, champions of football.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
It's bat ball, Jason.
Basketball?
No, they hit the ball with a bat. It's bat ball.
No, that's pretty sure that's cricket.
Oh.
Kidding, yeah.
Anyway,
I actually was paying attention to the Cubs. Didn't watch any of the games, but I was refreshing on my phone every once in a while to see if they were winning.
I came to work the other day and somebody said that the Cubs had done a thing.
Yeah, well, you mean today?
Was that today?
Yeah, it was today.
All right.
It feels like days ago, I know. So
yeah.
But anytime that like a team can do something, like it's been like 100 or something years since they won or something like that. So like whenever that can happen, like I root for that because that's the underdog, right? You got to root for the underdog. Uh-huh. So
as your son said, as I came in today, it's 100 and 100 and 100.
Yes. And then I think he said 100 million.
Yeah. He said a super 100 million.
Yeah.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was talking about stars, not bases.
Right.
So they got 100 bases.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think the final score was 8-7. Might've been. I may have made that up, but I'm pretty sure I was right. You the best is?
Yes, I'm sure you're
you don't
right.
know. I could have said the score was 18-14, and you wouldn't even known if that was a really high score or not.
I think I know that that's a high score for baseball.
Okay.
I think I know that. Just like basketball is generally a very high-scoring game.
Yeah,
generally. True.
Basketball is probably the highest scoring of the professional sports,
right? I don't know about hockey or
hockey's
or
very low-scoring in general, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's not uncommon to see a team win, like, 1-0 in hockey.
I know European football, or as we say, soccer.
Right. Fairly low-scoring.
It's fairly low-scoring game.
Yep. Football, Americano.
Football.
A little higher-scoring, sometimes.
Yeah.
Because they score in multiples of 7. Look at the stuff I know.
You know more than I do. So, in terms of upkeep.
Oh, gosh. Bring it home, Rob. Bring it home.
So, I don't know. I sidetracked you. I'm sorry.
You did. A little bit. A little bit. But no, so it has to be meaningful, right? So we have to, in a game like, but see, I don't know. Like, I would say that it just has to be thematically justified to make sense.
Uh-huh.
But again, the thing that annoyed me more than anything in the game Evolution was that I had a carnivore and then he kept eating all of my people.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the only way to keep him alive.
I mean, that's thematically justified and it's freaking annoying.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying,
yeah.
right? It's like,
yeah.
I should be all over that if I really believe the theme does it. Actually, I'm going to make a counter argument
okay,
here
that right.
it's not theme justified.
Do it.
Because I don't know who the... As the player, I don't know who you are in Evolution.
You're some omniscient...
Well, it's a game about evolution, so you're probably not some... Your nature, I guess? I don't know, but here's what I'm saying, right?
Who is the player? That's a good point.
That's going to really bother me now. But,
yeah.
one of the interesting things about it is the solution to the carnivore problem is to make a way to breed a bunch of really small animals and then eat them, right? But thematically, that's super duper stupid.
Yeah.
Because of the player, right?
Sure.
Because who's the player?
The players in that game are aliens who are seeding life on a new planet.
Panspermia. That's what that's called.
Is that what that's called? Okay. Yeah. All right.
The theory that aliens could see life. Panspermia.
Panspermia.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That sounds dirty.
It doesn't it though, right? Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Well, I might bleep that.
I don't think you need to. It's a science term. I didn't make that up.
Yeah. All right.
So you can Google it when you get home.
All right, builders, if that's offensive, I apologize. Jason told me I don't have to bleep it.
Yeah, so.
So let's, maybe I can put it this way. In order for upkeep to be okay, it needs to not feel like an interruption to the flow of the game. How about that?
And be easy to track.
Easy to track. It needs to be easy to keep track of. I'm not sure that there's any other way to phrase that.
Right.
Easy to track and not feel like it's interrupting the flow of the game.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that is the key to making upkeep okay. And honestly, Stone Age is pretty friendly in that. It is pretty friendly in that.
Yeah. I mean, my goal in Stone Age is always to get enough of the permanent fields so that I don't have to harvest.
Sure.
So I don't have to go look for food.
Or at least go get a lot of food right now so that I cannot have to worry about it for three or four turns. Yeah.
I usually, in the beginning, I usually go get a bunch of food.
Yeah.
And then I try and get enough fields built up so I don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, right.
So, and I usually do pretty well at that game.
You do, actually. You're pretty good at it. Yeah.
It's because you're too busy being annoyed by the upkeep to do well at the game.
Right. And then my wife is too busy rolling sixes when she goes to get gold and just dominating.
That sounds like your wife. She would do that.
She would do that. Ugh. She's so good at games and she doesn't even know why. I don't even know why. Anyway.
So it needs to not get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, have some sort of intrinsic benefit that makes it fun, if that's possible.
Yeah.
Which we don't know that it is.
That would depend on the games.
So here's one thing that's kind of cool about what Evolution does.
All right, do it.
With upkeep. Yep. Remember how everybody puts food in the middle?
Yeah.
And then you can take it out to feed things?
Yeah.
That's a cool way to do upkeep. Because that's for the non-carnivores, remember?
Yeah, right.
You put all the omnivores and herbivores. Yeah, you put all the stuff out in the middle, and then you get to draw from it.
Yeah.
But if it runs out, then you starve. That's a cool, because then upkeep is actually a group effort. It's not just, now everybody stop what you're doing and feed your people. And granted, in Stone Age, it's at the beginning of your turn, or the end of your turn. I think it's the end of your turn.
I don't remember.
It's the end, because you can go get food on that turn. All right. So I think that's kind of the solution there.
Upkeep sucks. Don't do upkeep.
Now I'm gonna design a game with upkeep and make it awesome.
Please do.
Just so that you hate it.
I would love to play that game and tell you why it's terrible. Hint. It's the upkeep that's terrible.
Hey, who's pitching a game this time?
I don't care.
Let me pitch a game. I'm ready.
All right.
Is that okay?
Sure. That's fine.
Let me just pull up my notes here.
Note your notes.
My notes. Okay, so I'm going to pitch a game.
Please do.
That you guys have heard the title of before, but I'm going to add three words to the end to completely turn it on its head.
The home game.
You're wrong, but that's awesome.
Well, you know.
I was just thinking of like Hunger Games, the home game.
Sure. Yeah.
Don't like your siblings? Have too many kids? Try Hunger Games, the home game.
Well, the thing is that all the games that we try and make are home games.
But when you say
games that you play at home.
I know. But when you say the home game, that generally means.
I know. Yeah.
Some version of.
Yeah. Something big and public.
Okay.
Yeah.
What I'm going to pitch tonight is Unreal Estate. The dice game.
Whoa!
Yeah. So, the idea is not originally me. It was actually Mark's idea. I was talking about Pressure Luck Dice Games, and Mark was like, hey, he's like, it'd be cool if you did this certain mechanic, which I'll explain in a minute, with a dice game. And then we were talking, and he's like, you could do that with an Unreal Estate theme, actually. And then I was like, and then I was just lit on it, right? Mm. So I started working on it, and I'm making a prototype to see what it does, right? So Yeah, I'm still very much in love with the world of Unreal Estate and how everything works there.
Yeah.
And then I did the Josh Mills. Which is I picked some other games I like.
Mm-hmm.
Just stole mechanics straight from them.
Good.
Just completely stole them.
Well done.
Thanks. Yeah, I felt pretty good about that. So that's what I did. All right. So let's talk about Unreal Estate, the dice game,
the home game,
the home game. Okay, so right now the game has 10 custom dice. My notes here say some cards. It's 75 right now.
And, just a few.
And a score tracker. And this is a 2-5 player base game. So the dice. Let's talk about the dice. Well, let's talk about the goal of the game. So the idea of the game is you're trying to build a city, like the other version. But instead of drafting buildings from a proposal board, you're actually buying buildings. There's a market of buildings that you can buy, and you are trying to buy to make your what you own in the city be the coolest, right? But this time around, it introduces the dice, and the dice. I didn't want the dice to just be resources, right? I wanted the dice to be something different. So what came to my head was what was missing from Unreal Estate? And it was characters, right? We talk a lot about characters, the Wizard's Tower, the Thieves Guild, but there's no wizard, there's no thief, right? And I thought, what if there was? So the 10 dice, there's two of each kind. There are two, and the idea is the dice represent a character. The character is good at getting you one resource and okay at getting you two others. And then also there's orcs on here that want to eat your face on one side, right?
I hate it when orcs eat my face.
Don't you? Yeah. So, the characters are, a warrior, a wizard, a thief, as you may have guessed, a ranger, and a paladin.
And builders, as you hear these little clacks as he's talking, he actually has the dice here that he's put together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are pretty good looking dice, aren't they? I mean,
they look fine. Yeah.
I feel pretty good about that. Yeah. So,
GameIcons.net.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, pro tip from Amazon, bag of blank multicolored dice in 7 colors, 100 of them, like $15.
Ooh. Yeah. Nice.
So I was going to buy the Rattlebones dice that Josh suggested, but I needed quite a few of them. Mm-hmm. So I just quick look for blank dice, and I have those full sheet labels that you convinced me to get that actually work really, really well.
Oh, they're great, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's where these came from. So there's two of each. The idea is these get put in the middle of the game, in the middle of the thing. You've got two different decks of cards. You have regular buildings, and you have special buildings, okay? And every building is going to have a few things on it. It's going to have what you need to build it, right? It's going to have a character that would occupy the building, which is going to be one of the 5 characters, which are just character classes, obviously. And then it's going to have a point value you get when you buy it. It's going to have a power that happens when you use it. And we'll get to that in a minute. And then it's going to have, if it's a base building, it's going to have a permanent resource that it will give you for having that, that's what I stole from Splendor for this idea. So the base buildings are the cheapest. The more expensive buildings are the specialty buildings from the original game. Some of them, I stole some buildings from the original game, and then I introduced a bunch of new buildings as well. So the specialty buildings, instead of giving you a permanent resource, you gain more points when you buy them, and then they give you a special ability you can use. So how do you use buildings? Well, the buildings, like I said, have a character that they need, right? So on the dice, for instance, let's look at the warrior. The warrior has one side is the warrior. Two sides are iron, because warriors like iron and steel, right? One side's an orc, because every die has one side is an orc. One side is a stone, and the other side is wood. Okay? So when you roll the die, if you get any one of the resources, it's worth one of the resources, right? But if you get the character, it's worth two of their favored resource, or use the character, right? Hmm. And to use any building ability, it's always use a character, right? So the base buildings right now, because I'm just trying to keep it simple, are if I assign a warrior to a base building that is warrior favored, I earn 3 points for that, right? Now, let's say I have multiples of that same building. If I use the warrior on that, I score all the buildings in that stack. So that's kind of how it compounds like the base game. So if you had 3 of them, boom, 9 points for that one die, right? Okay, so on your turn, what's going to happen is you're going to take 5 dice out of the center. You can pick any 5 dice you want based on what's in the marketplace and what you're looking to buy, right?
How many cards are in the marketplace?
Right now, I think it's 5 and 5.
Okay. And so these cards are shuffled and randomly put out there face up so you know what you're picking from?
Yes. You know what you're picking from because you have to purchase them, right?
Right.
And along the bottom, they have the base things take four.
Four resources,
two of one kind, whatever their favorite thing is, and then two random other ones. And then they're perfectly balanced because that's what you do.
Sure.
So, so you pick those. This is the whole idea that sparked it, is when I roll these, I can roll them as many times as I want to try and get what I want. Uh-huh. Here's the catch. When I get an orc, I give it to the player on my left. Right?
Okay.
So all my fails go to him. And on the next turn, he's going to draw five from the center, and he keeps all the fails that I sent to him, right? Okay. And that was Mark's idea, which he actually got thinking about the game, and then from Warehouse 51.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Kind of that economy that's brilliant in that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, right.
Best thing about that game, actually, is the way the economy works.
Oh, yeah. It's excellent.
So that's what happens when I'm rolling the dice. I can roll them as many times as I want, but the limiting factor is I'm constantly giving stuff to my neighbors.
So and then first player in the whole game is going to be a little bit of a disadvantage.
But it's one turn
out of a
lot of turns you play. So I'm thinking this game will be about a 30-minute game rather than just a 15-minute game.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny because most of the time you take a bigger game and you're making the dice version, which is smaller. The faster version. And I've done the opposite.
Yeah.
I'm adding a little more complexity in. And let me see. So are you getting an idea of how to play the game? I'm just seeing if there's anything else I missed here.
So we've got games out or cards again on the proposal board.
Yep. Well, in this case, it's the marketplace.
The marketplace. Marketplace.
I mean, I guess it could be the proposal board and you're building those buildings, but yeah.
Sure. And I'm going to roll five dice and hopefully get the set of four resources that I need. And then, I roll whatever I want, and then if I get four that matches one of the cards out there, I can go ahead and buy that.
Yep, and immediately it comes into play. And then, assuming you're buying base ones first, and you have to. No, you don't have to. You could get really lucky, but the other ones cost six, right? So if I rolled the four resources I need plus a character that gives me two more resources, I could have six resources.
Sure.
I mean, the five plus one. So that would give me the six resources. No, actually, you only get five. Yeah, that would work. Dirt. Sorry. But it's very, very unlikely. But those base buildings giving you that, like, so if I buy something for the warrior, that's going to give me a permanent iron that I have every turn to spend. Does that make sense?
And so when I buy that, it's now mine, and it's going to give me a forever bonus going forward.
Plus one iron.
Yep. Plus one iron on every turn. And every card is going to have some bonus on them.
Every base card without a special power is.
Okay.
So in the base cards, all they do are I can spend a character on them that matches to score points.
Okay.
At the end of the game, having the most points is still what wins you the game.
How do you spend a character on them?
So if I roll a warrior on this die, right? So it doesn't matter. Nobody can see this. Sorry.
Yeah.
If I roll a warrior on this die, when I just like I would be using the dice to buy things, I would just put it on that building. And now the building has used the ability. So I've spent that die.
Okay. And you're not going to be able to keep rolling that die for the rest of the
correct,
turn.
Correct. Because I spent it on that.
All right.
And when I do that, then I would score points or I would use the ability. And the abilities, some of them allow you to mess with other players. Like there's the Thieves Guild, I think, lets you... so you can store abilities in this, which is something I kind of like. So I can take a specialty building, spend the character on it, and then turn it upside down. Like just rotate it 180 degrees.
Okay.
And that means that it's powered up.
Oh.
And then I can use it at a later time.
Oh, I like that idea.
Yeah, I thought that was really fun. Because I was like, we could leave the die in it, but I only want to have 10 dice in the game, which could be really limiting after a while.
Yeah, right.
So then I thought, well, so for instance, the Thieves Guild, you have it turned 180 degrees. It's charged, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, alternatively, you could use like simple tokens or something, but flipping it around is
just
totally
really
easy.
Simple, right? And then, so if you're about to get a die, an orc, I could spend it and take the orc from you, and I keep that orc until it's my turn. So I can actually use that to reduce the economy, or I could just use it to give me a bonus for my next time. But then there's also, each character has a specialty building where it's, if you pay the character to them, you can turn it, and now you've stored two of that resource on it. So at a later turn, I can spend those two resources to give my, so if I want to have a big turn to buy something bigger or something like that, and you can buy as many things as you can afford. Most of the time, that's only going to be one thing.
Sure.
Later in the game, there may be times when you can buy a couple. But Yeah. So that's pretty much the game. The complexity really comes out of the cards and
your powers, you know, yeah.
Your powers and the cards and stuff. So
I like that idea.
Oh, and I was thinking, I was going to try this out, that because, you know, at the beginning of the game, each person picks a character, and this could be a card, right? So, like, I'm the warrior, which means I get a +1 when I buy a warrior building, right? Or when I use a warrior ability, I gain a point for that.
And there are no buildings that don't have some inherent affiliation?
Well, the only one that doesn't is the Orcish Outpost from the original game.
Yeah, okay.
And that one, you have to cost one of every resource and an orc to buy, right? And what the Orcish Outpost does is, when you roll, it has an ability that spend an orc on it. And when you do that, it goes to the center, right? So on the turn, if I get an orc once per turn, I can spend it on there to not give it to the player to the left, right?
Okay.
And then the specialty buildings, when you buy them, are all worth 5 points immediately, whereas the other ones are only worth 1. So there's an inherent bonus to buying the special buildings, but you'll never score more points off the special buildings.
Yeah.
Whereas with the other buildings, that's what they're meant to do. So, this was one of the easier things I put together because the world is really works well for me.
Yeah. It's in your head, you know? Yeah. It's like a living place in your head. So.
Right. So it's really easy to be like, what else would this have? So, what time is it? We got to, actually, I think we're, I'm going to just.
We're about out of time.
I think we're getting there. So, but some of the new, for the people who are familiar with the buildings and stuff, the new things, I think, tell me if these all feel thematically justified, but I added the Familiar Emporium, the Kobold Apothecary, the Draconian Forge, the Blessed Altar. That's a paladin one, the Griffin Stables, the Bard Stage, the Nymph's Glade, the Wilderness Fortress, the Forest Ruins, the Dragon's Lair, the Gladiator's Arena, the Sacred Temple, and the Ancient Aqueducts.
Yeah, great.
Those all feel very, right?
All good. Yeah, they all super fit right easy. In.
And I have to credit a few of those back to people from the Kickstarter for Unreal Estate. I was, during the end, we were stirring up conversation. So I was like, hey, give me new cards you want to see.
Yeah.
You know, and so those are some of them. Bard Stage and Dragon's Lair were two good ones.
Yeah,
so.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think somebody had said like Enchanter's Emporium, but that to me sounded too much like magic items, but I'm like, oh, Emporium is really good.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, familiars. Familiars are cool for wizards. So yeah.
Right.
So I've got a prototype mostly done. Hopefully test it out next week sometime. Well, I'm going to actually show it to Mark next week to have him play through, since he also is, other than me, he's probably the most familiar person with the real estate.
Yeah.
So to kind of see if he feels like it works or not. Nothing special we're doing with it. You know what I mean? It's just this seemed like a fun thing and I needed a game idea. And so, so I'm going to show it to him and get some feedback. Hopefully, like I said, he knows the world of Unreal Estate and also the game very, very well. So I think he'll have some good thoughts on it.
Cool.
So
right on.
So that's what I got. We have one voicemail.
Do we? Okay. Play. Excellent.
And, then we'll call it good for the Narch.
Cool.
Builders, Jason, Rob, it's Shu. Two things. One, Rob, I was curious, you didn't mention, or haven't mentioned in a really long time, Epic Monster Tea Party, and I wonder what's going on. You know that I've been a passionate friend of that game since it has existed, and I'm just curious because I would love to have a produced, real, published copy, instead of GameCrafter stuff that we also cobbled together with a plastic tea set that my daughter's had and don't use anymore. Second thing, I was curious if you guys have ever done, and I don't remember, I've listened to all your episodes, but it's been a super long time. Have you ever done an episode about video game design, or have either of you ever thought about doing design for a video game? I actually recently got picked up by a video game development company, and I would love to hear some of your thoughts on that now that I am apparently a video game designer. It's been a blast and really fun time, but curious what your thoughts are. I've never heard you guys talk about it. I know it's a little bit off the beaten path, but... that's all. Love the show. Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
Thank you, Shu. Congratulations, man. That sounds like a heck of a good career step for you. That's super awesome. And
sounds really cool.
Mega jealous.
Yeah, that too.
So let's stay on that topic to start with. I mean, what kid who grew up in the 80s and 90s doesn't want to make video games for a living, right?
Right.
I know. I mean, come on. But I don't know the first thing about writing code or anything like that. And I don't want to, there are so many people in that industry who are who have good ideas, who are smart, who know the business, who have the experience of coding and, you know, have all the technical experience that you should really should have in order to be working in the industry. I don't want to have pretend that I'm as smart and as capable as those people are. And I wouldn't even know where to begin to break into that kind of into that industry.
Yeah. That said, I think both of us would love to design a video game.
Would love to. Yeah. And I've toyed with, I think back in the 90s, there was the Bard's Tale construction set where you could make your own D&D themed RPG. And, and there's RPG Maker series that I think those go on sale on Steam now and then. I've come close to buying those a few times just to have something to mess with. I would love to, but
there was, I don't remember if it was Neverwinter Nights or something. There was some game I played and that had a whole world builder where you could just build your own world and build your own campaign within it. And I started working on it and it was just too much for me.
Yeah.
So
sure. It's just overwhelming. And I don't have kids and I feel like I don't have time to really do that kind of stuff as a hobby. And I already have tabletop game design as a hobby, and right. I can't fit another one in.
Right. I mean, that said, yeah, if there was like a video game company that I knew that was like, hey, design a game, we're going to code it, I'd be like, yeah.
Okay.
Let me put some game designs aside for a minute here.
Sounds good to me.
I really like the games you can do with apps, right? You know, like the boardish games, the cardish games, you know, I mean, the kind of the stuff that we're familiar with, but just making it a little easier by making it be, there's a couple of games I've played that are RPG like, and yet they use cards to drive the game. And I think that's really cool.
Oh yeah.
Cause it feels really physical. I think that's neat. So.
And if it fits the size of the device you're using on.
Exactly. You know?
I think that's a natural fit, but
yeah,
but you know, and there are things that tabletop designs or card game designs that I work on, and I realize, oh man, if this is a video game, this would be so much easier.
It's so easy
because a computer could just keep track of all these variables and all these state changes and things.
Upkeep,
and, all this upkeep. The computer could just handle that. The phone, whatever, could just handle that, and the player could just focus on doing cool stuff.
Yeah,
like in fact, the game that I'm going to pitch next week, I got about halfway through and I was like, oh wait. That's right. I have to do this with cards. So I had to kind of start over a lot on that. But yeah, so I would love to do that. I just, you know, I try to be realistic about my own capabilities and not think too highly of myself.
Nice.
On the subject of Epic Monster Tea Party, don't really know where we are with that right now. That's with the publisher still. Let's see. My understanding is that their last Kickstarter game just shipped, which was Danger, Danger Dinosaur. So I think that the last Kickstarter they ran just finally shipped to backers. So I hope that means a Tea Party Kickstarter would be launching in the near future, but I don't know that for sure. I know the last I heard officially is that they were hoping to launch one shortly after Origins, and obviously that didn't go through. So fingers crossed sometime this fall or this winter. We'll just kind of wait and see. But as soon as I know something for sure, I will certainly let you builders know. And Shu, you know, I really do owe you, man. You have been a great champion for that game since day one, and I really appreciate that very, very much. So... thank you for that.
Yes. All right.
Okay.
Cool.
That's what we got.
That's what we got.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, you know the drill. You can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JAslingerland. I'm @poorly_designed. Like us on places. Call our Google voice number at 770-TEL-BTG. Buildinggamepodcast.com. Buy the games on there that we have for sale. And do more of listening to us. We'll see you guys next week.
Yes. Good night.
Bye.
Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All of the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are property of the Building the Game podcast. Next time on Building the Game.
Little filler music here. I'm assuming you're cutting this anyways, but
we'll see. Keep going.
Wicka wicka what?
All right.